This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Problems selling fossil fuels? Pesky green critics moving the public? Don't worry. In America, billionaires can hide money in charities, sowing doubt and denial. And taxpayers help pay billions of dollars for it, whether they know it or not. A new report from the Institute for Policy Studies digs deep and names names. The authors are Helen Flannery and Chuck Collins. Chuck is the director of the program on inequality and the common good at IPS. His most recent nonfiction book is The Wealth Hoarders: How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions. In September, the pair released a detailed document. It's very helpful. It's called Fossil Fuel Philanthropy: How Taxpayer-Subsidized Charities Promote Climate Change Disinformation and Stall Urgent Action. Chuck Collins, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Great to be with you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
It's not enough to become a multi-billionaire these days. You must protect your loot and grab even more. Chuck, tell us about the wealth defense industry.
There's a whole sector, if you will, of workers whose job is to help the ultra-wealthy defend their assets, minimize tax, and maximize the amount of money that goes to heirs and children down the dynastic line. And we call that the wealth defense industry. They're tax attorneys, wealth managers, people who staff family offices. And again, Alex, these are people who they're serving, you know, people with $30 million, $40 million, or all the way up to the billionaires. So we're talking about super wealthy folks who can afford to hire helpers to help them move their wealth to the shadows.
So could you introduce us to the vast pools of money from fossil fuel profits to alleged charities pumping out climate denial?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're familiar that obviously the fossil fuel industry uses their influence and power to lobby and get fossil fuel subsidies and block legislation they don't like. But what we don't realize is that there are companies and individuals whose wealth has come from the fossil fuel industry who give to charity institutions. They give to their own foundations and donor-advised funds. And in turn, they fund think tanks and nonprofit groups that are doing climate disinformation, climate denial, promoting sham science. You know, I think we're all familiar with the Koch brothers, who Charles and the late David Koch, who used their considerable wealth coming from a oil services company, Koch Industries, to give a lot of money to candidates and politicians, but they also give a lot of money through the charity system, and they give it to the Heritage Foundation or the Cato Institute or the Heartland Institute, which is totally devoted to promoting sort of an alternative narrative on climate and energy. And our report found over a three-year period, 2020 to 2023, an estimated up to $5.9 billion in charitable gifts. These are gifts that the donors get a tax break. They get a tax reduction. We could identify, you know, a specific couple hundred climate denial groups that received charitable donations. And our point here is the rest of us, taxpayers, essentially subsidize the charitable giving by these fossil fuel barons who are getting tax breaks and advancing their agenda. And I think the public hadn't really thought about that, and we hadn't really thought about it till a couple of years ago.
And you write, quote, "The fossil fuel industry has been able to harness our charitable system for their disinformation campaigns and to do it largely in secret." How do they protect these secrets, Chuck?
Yeah, one of the ways is there's a sort of giving vehicle called the Donor Advised Fund. It's sort of like a mini foundation. You know, many individuals and donors have them. They might be at a sponsor like Fidelity or Schwab or Goldman Sachs. So they give money to this donor advice fund, and as a donor, they direct where it goes, what's the nonprofit recipient. Well, it turns out donor advice funds don't really have to disclose publicly where their donations are going. Foundations, private foundations, do have to disclose where their money's going. So what happens is wealthy fossil fuel barons have a family foundation, they will then give the money to a DAF, say at Schwab Charitable, and Schwab will then give the money to a climate disinformation group or a sort of a dark money organization, but the rest of us won't know that. So it's a way that they can kind of secretly move a lot of money to kind of more edgy and potentially negative publicity type organizations. We know, for instance, the Heritage Foundation, which published this book, Project 2025, which is sort of the blueprint for an incoming conservative Trump administration. A lot of that money that went to fund that research and that policy development came through donor advised funds, through anonymous donations, where donors didn't want anyone to know where the money was coming from. So it's a kind of a way to launder, if you will, or secretly move money to more partisan and edgy causes.
Growing up, we thought of charities helping the poor. Money was collected for food or blankets or something. Here we have charities supporting the rich. How is any of this propaganda and lying about science a charity?
Well, that's a great question, Alex. And you know, stepping back, I think part of the context is as wealth inequality has grown, as more and more of the societal wealth is concentrated in fewer hands, the whole philanthropy sector has somewhat been upended. We call it top-heavy philanthropy. Most of the giving is by very, very wealthy donors. And the share of giving by middle-income and non-wealthy donors keeps shrinking. Now you have very, very wealthy people, and they like to give through. They don't give directly to their nonprofits. Often they give through a foundation or a donor advice fund. They give through an intermediary. But, you know, that is a good question, and that's actually more of a question for, like, the Treasury Department and the IRS that give charity status to the nonprofit organizations. And they kind of walk a tight line there, the organizations. They may say, well, we don't really do a lot of advocacy. We're just doing policy development. We're providing public information and education. So they qualify as sort of education organizations, but the reality is they aggressively are putting out a point of view. I think most of us don't understand how that's possible. How is it that charity dollars go to something that has such a political, if you will, kind of program? But that is the case. If it was overtly political, if it was hiring a lobbyist to go to lobby a member of Congress, that may not fall into the tax-exempt purposes, but there's other ways that the fossil fuel barons and the wealthy use to move money in that way. They give. So if you're the Koch brothers, you kind of sit there and say, what are all the tools that we have to influence and advance our agenda, our climate disinformation denial agenda? And so some of that would be, we'll give money directly to candidates. We'll give money to political action committees. We'll give money to C4 corporations that can do advocacy. And then we'll give some of these charitable dollars to think tanks and kind of education organizations that qualify as charities. So they look at how to weaponize all the tools that they have in their toolbox, including their charitable giving.
As of December 2nd, 2024, Charles Koch's wealth increased by $6.75 billion this year. He's worth $67 billion, most of it from fossil fuel industry. If Charles spends $1 or $2 billion to keep the United States fossil friendly to the max, is that just a cost of doing business?
Not just a cost of doing business, it's probably a rather smart investment for his own personal wealth. Since Election Day, we have seen, in anticipation of a fossil fuel-friendly agenda, we've seen oil and gas stocks go up, and we've seen people who are engaged in that field see their personal wealth rapidly increase. We're actually going to do a report in a couple weeks that looks at the big donors, the big conservative fossil fuel donors like Harold Hamm and Tim Mellon. These are billionaires who gave substantial money to elect the president-elect, Trump, and have seen their assets go up dramatically. In fact, on April 11th last year, Trump convened all the fossil fuel CEOs and the American Petroleum Institute. All these people came to Mar-a-Lago ostensibly to have a discussion about energy policy, but Trump made a bald-faced pitch. He said, basically, according to the people who were there, look, if you raise me $1 billion, I'll deregulate the energy economy and I'll get rid of those pesky rules, you know, moratorium on liquefied natural gas, all those kind of things. Oh, and by the way, you'll make, between the tax breaks and the deregulation, you'll make those donations back fast. Literally, he said, you know, you'll get your money back really quickly. And that's already happening. The payback is already happening. From a very cynical point of view, giving money to charity, giving, you know, a couple $1 billion to influence the political system and essentially capture the political system so that it's friendly to oil, gas, and coal is a good investment with a big return.
And you find just three of these heavily cloaked donor-advised fund sponsors provide two-thirds of the hidden funding for climate disinformation groups. They forwarded over $500 million that you were able to find into disinfo in 3 years. Could you tell us, who are they?
The three big ones. There's an institution called Donors Trust, which is kind of what Mother Jones calls it, sort of the dark money ATM of the conservative movement. It is a sponsoring organization for donor advice funds, and we know billions of dollars flows through that. The National Philanthropic Trust, which actually is the second largest recipient of charity dollars in the U.S., they funneled an estimated $242 million to climate disinformation organizations. And Schwab, through the Schwab Charitable Fund, is a huge intermediary of dark money and money that goes to climate disinformation, another $212 million. And that's the money we know about. We, you know, there are limits to how much we're able to track because of the secrecy of where DAF donations go. We can kind of overall track the recipient groups to some extent and look at where they're getting their money. Again, these are intermediaries that, you know, some people have an account at Schwab and a donor-advised account, and they give to, you know, the food bank and the Boys and Girls Club, so it's not all that money is tainted. But people are very happy to use those donor-advised funds as a way to sort of funnel money into the shadows to do this advocacy agenda.
America is really kind of a family system at the top of multi-billionaire families, and some of them have, like the Mellons, received it from their fathers and their fathers before them. So we have 10 private foundations named for their founding families, like the Scaifes, and they gave more millions to professional climate deniers. And apparently, it only takes a few dozen super wealthy individuals or families to plant climate doubt in millions of minds. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think, Alex, that's right. That what we've learned is that these wealthy fossil fuel barons, people who are heirs, I would call them dynasties, their family dynasty. The Mellon family from Tim Mellon is the fourth generation from the oil and banking family that worked with Carnegie and Rockefeller. Here's Tim Mellon. Four generations later, he's still a billionaire, and he's still giving substantial money to advance the climate change denial agenda. And you look, yeah, the Scaife Foundation, the Kochs, the Popes, the John William Pope Foundation, the 10 big. These are family foundations. Many of them are kind of like from dynastically wealthy families, and they're still giving to organizations that are blocking alternatives, opposing solar and clean energy transition, sowing doubt. And I think what you said, Alex, is true. You know, what the fossil fuel industry figured out is if they can divide public opinion, if they can make environmental issues sort of culture war, right versus left, which wasn't always the case, you know, wasn't even the case 20 years ago. If they could drive that wedge and just stop reforms from happening. And that's a lot of what the fossil fuel industry has done in the way that they've captured our political system. So I kind of resent this because I feel like, well, these folks are using their considerable charity money, their taxpayer subsidized by the rest of us, charity giving, to run out the clock for action. And they're doing it quite consciously, and they're using a taxpayer-subsidized system to do it. So that sort of doubles the insult, if you will. But yeah, among these 10 foundations, you know, again, some of them are giving 34, you know, the SCAFE foundations. It's $34 million over just 3 years to climate disinformation nonprofit. So it's a major centerpiece of their charitable giving.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex with our guest Chuck Collins from the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. This river of dirty fossil fuel money must deliver perks to these public experts that we see on our television screens or in front of a Congress appearance. And they give the media quotes of doubt. They stoke paranoia in the masses. Oh, we're all going to freeze in the dark. You won't be able to cook meat anymore. And the spokespeople, they get excellent rooms in good hotels. They get conferences with applause. They get heavenly bar bills, no doubt, and all the appearances of power. And most of them are white men. Have you met these charity men? Have you talked with them?
You know, I have met a couple of them. You realize that, just as you describe, they are well paid and well taken care of by the fossil fuel industry. And essentially they are sort of foot soldiers in this partisan conflict over the future of energy policy. And their job is just to kind of stall and keep government away and keep public opinion from pushing government to take action to transition us to a post-fossil fuel economy. So, you know, I have met Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation. I have met James Taylor, who's the president of the Heartland Institute. I attended a Heartland Institute conference just to sort of see how they operated. Incidentally, his brother, who used to be a climate denier, has switched sides and is now a business leader who advocates for addressing climate change, the realities and harms of climate change. So here, within the same family, you have two people active on opposing sides. There's a woman, Michelle Bloodsworth, who is a big advocate for coal, and I've actually met and talked to her. And, you know, her job is to, in the next year, have existing coal plants considered critical infrastructure, classified as critical infrastructure, so they don't have to close down. And even everybody else in the field acknowledges coal is the worst, dirtiest form of carbon emissions, and so they're kind of just trying to take the money and run just for a few more years, keep those coal plants online. So here they're actively lobbying to keep coal plants open and get Trump to declare it's a national emergency and we should not shut those plants down so they can pollute just a couple more years and under the guise of energy independence for the U.S. Many of them are true believers. They really do believe that fossil fuel is, you know, the best thing ever, and to limit our uses of fossil fuel will harm the economy. But some of them are pretty cynical. They know the harms that they're sowing, and their job is just to keep the band playing for a few more years so they can extract more profits before the world shuts down their, you know, harmful enterprises. So that's the game that's underway, and here they are using charitable tax dollars to accomplish this goal.
Well, meanwhile, we have scientists on this program telling us we don't have those few years. In fact, we had those few years back around 2005 or something like that, but now it's too late. We can't be spending time doing nothing. Could you tell us about climatecriminals.org?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, what you just described is sort of our, there's a project called the Climate Accountability Research Project that we partnered with to do this report. And they've put out a website, climatecriminals.org. And, you know, we know now from research from groups like Inside Climate News and others that, you know, Shell and Exxon have known for almost 50 years about the harms of climate change. But what this project is doing is looking at the individuals, the decision makers, the people who had agency and power over those decision makings. You know, who in the last few decades has hired ad agencies to promote climate disinformation? Who has published books and gone on talk shows to cast doubt about climate science? Who are the drivers? who have used their power, position, and wealth to effectively run out the clock and block alternatives. And so in July, on Climate Emergency Day this year, which is the day when the climate clock keeps ticking down, we released the 24 climate criminals. And I encourage your listeners to check out the website climatecriminals.org and learn their names and learn the people. And I kind of think someday, maybe not too far off, there will be global tribunals where we ask ourselves, who was responsible? Who ran out humanity's clock? Who cynically used their power to shut down alternatives? Just like war criminals, we will be bringing these individuals forward to face the consequences of their actions. And so we're preparing the dossiers and preparing the information. Yesterday, the first major climate-related case went before the International Criminal Court in The Hague in the Netherlands. We are encouraging them to look into individuals who have used their considerable clout to lead us down the wrong path. And I agree that it's not that the clock is ticking. We're currently passing points of no return. You know, we're going to continue to have extreme weather events and hurricanes and wildfires and floods. And, you know, I'm somebody who does some part-time farming and maple sugaring, and I can just tell you in 10 years, things are way more haywire in our ecology. You know, at this point, we got to turn the corner rapidly to diminish even worse consequences. So, yeah, the climatecriminals.org is really an effort to hold individuals responsible, as well as identify people who did the wrong thing and changed their minds and are now rejoining the rest of humanity in our effort to shift the trajectory of where we're going. So we think, you know, individuals are responsible, and they also can atone for the role that they played decades ago or recently. So we're calling on people to name the climate criminals. If they show up in your town, go out and protest them and turn your back on them. If they try to give to your local charity and greenwash and virtue wash their reputations, we can say, look, you're a climate criminal, and the current administration is appointing climate criminals in the administration. We should be calling them that. That's the role they play, just like war criminals in previous chapters of world history.
Yeah, the climate criminals appear to be taking over in America, at least for now. The proposed new head of the FBI promises to investigate critics, including journalists. You and I are midgets trying to pull back the curtain on the money wizards. Are we going to be in trouble?
I wouldn't be surprised, because if you think about where we're at, the fossil fuel industry knows that they don't have a lot of... they don't have much to stand on, but they are good at getting power, and they now have an incoming administration who not only is going to allow them to operate without oversight and regulation, but will also go after their opponents. So yeah, you know, maybe this conversation someday we'll have to, you know, but I'm willing to stand by what I'm saying here, and that's what happens when you have a fossil fuel authoritarian society. You know, there are other countries like Saudi Arabia where I suppose if you and I were criticizing the oil industry, we'd probably be in jail. Maybe the United States is heading that way, scary as that sounds. That's when a fossil fuel industry cannot morally stand on its own. It has to use repression to keep its opponents down, and even to not have certain kinds of conversation in public spaces. That's unfortunately, you know, we're kind of veering into uncharted territory here as a democracy. Not in our lifetime have we seen anything that's been proposed like this. But I also think a lot of us are going to organize and try to promote common sense and ride out this moment that we're in. But it's just sad that we're going to spend another couple years not addressing the urgent scientifically based challenges that we're facing, and that we're going to be further distracted by the chaos and potentially the repression. So yeah, let's all stand up together here and keep telling people what we know.
From the Institute for Policy Studies, we've been speaking with Chuck Collins, director of the program on inequality and the common good. Our topic is fossil fuel philanthropy, how taxpayer-subsidized charities promote climate change, disinformation, and stall urgent climate action. And this free report's a real education on the people behind the veil. I encourage you to find it and read it. You can look for it at ips-dc.org, ips-dc.org, or use links in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Either way, Chuck, thank you for talking with our listeners here on the program.
Thanks, Alex, and thanks to all your listeners who care about this.
I'm Alex Smith reporting. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. There is a ton of breaking news about climate change. Two stories I'm working on for you, global drying and the cause of the heat jump in 2023 and 24. The United Nations just released a report finding three-quarters of Earth's land became permanently drier in the last three decades. What? What happened to global wetting? The Earth getting greener? And 1,000 videos on TV and social media as flash floods roar through city streets around the world? Don't be fooled, the UN says. Yes, very extreme rainfall events are increasing, but most of the world's people, plants, and animals are facing a permanent drying. That means extinctions, reduced crop yields, flood strain leading to political stress, and more mass migration. We will explore. Second big news, pretty convincing science shows low cloud cover has decreased on this planet recently. That means less solar energy is being reflected back into space. That is probably why the Earth became warmer, faster, in the last 2 years, scientists say. It is more than ship emissions. This change, too, may be permanent. If so, global temperature will not go back down to 1.5 degrees C. The big warming was not temporary. Right now is the coolest time you will ever live through. And there is a ton we do not know about where this goes from here. The most extreme case is covered in my 2019 program, When Clouds Cannot Continue, The Great Warming. We are not there yet. All this and more coming up on Radio EcoShock. Next, now you need to protect your brain from wildfire smoke. Stay tuned.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.